Chapter 16. Cheese. The controversial milk levy, from which the unpopular cheese duty is derived, was imposed in 1970 by the then Whig government, which needed to raise funds for a potential escalation of war in the Crimea. With the duty now running at 1,530% on hard and 1,290% on smelly, illegal cheesemaking and smuggling had become a very lucrative business indeed. The Cheese Enforcement Agency was formed not only to supervise the licensing of cheese, but also to collect the tax levied on it by an overzealous government. Small wonder that there was a thriving underground cheese market. "Thanks for tipping us the wink about the dodo fanciers," I said, as we drove through the darkened streets of Swindon 2 hours later. A tow truck had removed the wreckage of the fancier's car, and the police had been around to collect statements. Despite its being a busy neighbourhood, no one had seen anything. They had, of course, but the Park Lane Nexts were quite popular in the area.
"Are you sure we weren't being followed?" asked Millen, as we pulled up outside an empty industrial unit not a stone's throw from the city's airship field.
"Positive," I replied.
"Have you got buyers for it?" "The usual cheese heads are all champing at the bit. Recipes at the ready. The evening air will be rich with the scent of Welsh rarebit tonight."
A large 70-seat airship rose slowly into the sky behind the factory units. We watched while its silver flanks caught the colours of the late evening sun as it turned and, with its four propellers beating the still air with a rhythmic hum, set course for Southampton.
"Ready?"
I asked.
"Ready," said Millen.
I beeped the horn twice, and the steel shutters were slowly raised on the nearest industrial unit.
"Tell me," said Millen, "why do you think the old town Stiltonisters gave you the flaming camembert?"
"A warning, perhaps. But we've never bothered them, and they've never bothered us."
"Our two territories don't even overlap," he observed. "Do you think the Cheese Enforcement Agency is getting bolder?"
"Perhaps."
"You don't seem very worried."
"The CEA is underfunded and knows nothing. Besides, we have customers to attend to. And Acme needs the cash. Think you can liberate 5 grand by tomorrow morning?"
"Depends what they've got," he said, after a moment's reflection. "If they're trying to peddle common or garden cheddar-esque, or that processed crap, then we could be in trouble. But if they've got something exotic, then no problem at all."
The roller shutter was high enough to let us in by now, and we drove inside, the shutter reversing direction to close behind us. We climbed out of the van. The industrial unit was empty, except for a large Welsh-registered Griffin V8 truck, a long table with leather sample cases lying on it, and four men wearing black suits with black ties and sunglasses, and looking vaguely menacing. It was all bravado, of course. Scorsese movies were big in the Welsh Republic. I tried to see by the swing of their jackets if any of them were packing heat, and guessed that they weren't. I'd only carried a gun once in the real world since Spec Ops was disbanded, and hoped I never had to again. Cheese smuggling was still a polite undertaking. As soon as it turned ugly, I was out.
"Owen Price the Cheese," I said, in a genial manner, greeting the leader of the group with a smile and a firm handshake.
"Good to see you again. I trust the trip across the border was uneventful."
"It's getting a lot harder these days," he replied in a sing-song Welsh accent that betrayed his roots in the south of the Republic.
"Probably Abertawe.
There are duty men everywhere, and the bribes I have to pay are reflected in the price of the goods."
"As long as it's a fair price, I replied pleasantly. "My clients love cheese, but there's a limit to what they'll pay."
We were both lying, but it was the game we played. My clients would pay good money for high-quality cheese, and as likely as not, he didn't bribe anyone. The border with Wales was 170 miles long and had more holes than a hastily matured Emmentaler. There weren't enough dutymen to cover it all, and to be honest, although it was illegal, no one took cheese smuggling that seriously. Price nodded to one of his compatriots, and they opened the sample cases with a flourish. It was all there, every single make of cheese you could imagine, from pure white to dark amber, crumbly, hard, soft, liquid, gas. The rich aroma of well-matured cheese escaped into the room, and I felt my taste buds tingle. This was top-quality shit. The best available.
"Smells good, Price."
He said nothing and showed me a large slab of white cheese.
"Kefilli," he said. "The best. We can..."
I put up a hand to stop him. "The punks can deal with the mild stuff, Price. We're interested in level 3.8 and above."
He shrugged, set the kefilli down, and picked up a small chunk of creamy-coloured cheese. "Quintuple flamboy D," he announced. "A 5.2. It'll play on your taste buds like the plucked strings of a harp."
"We'll have the usual of that, Price," I muttered. "But my clients are into something a little stronger. What else you got?"
We always went through this charade. My speciality was the volatile cheese market. And when I say volatile, I don't mean the market. I mean the cheese.
Price nodded and showed me a golden yellow cheese that had veins of red running through it.
"Quadruple strength Dalgichai vein clotter," he announced. "It's a 9.5 matured in Blaenarfon for 18 years, and not for the faint-hearted. Good on crackers, but can function equally well as an amorous skunk repellent." I took a daringly large amount and popped it on my tongue. The taste was extraordinary. I could almost see the Cambrian mountains, just visible in the rain, low clouds, gushing water and limestone crags, frost-shattered scree and...
"Are you all right?" said Millen, when I opened my eyes. "You passed out for a moment there."
"Kicks like a mule, doesn't it?" said Price kindly. "Have a glass of water."
"Thank you. We'll take all you have. What else you got?"
"My Nachlog the Old Contemptible," said Price, showing me a whitish, crumbly cheese. "It's kept in a glass jar because it will eat through cardboard or steel. Don't leave it in the air too long, as it will start dogs howling."
"We'll have 30 kilos.
"What about this one?" I asked, pointing at an innocuous-looking ivory-coloured soft cheese.
"Astrid Ganlice, Molecular Unstable Brie," announced Price. "A soft cheese we've cloned from our cheese-making brethren in France. But every bit as good. Useful as a contact anaesthetic or a paint stripper. It can cure insomnia, and ground to dust is a very useful self-defence against muggers and wandering bears. It has a half-life of 23 days. Glows in the dark, and can be used as a source of X-rays."
"We'll take the lot."
"Got anything... really strong?"
Price raised an eyebrow, and his minders looked at one another uneasily.
"Are you sure?"
"It's not for me," I said hastily, "but we've got a few serious cheeseheads who can take the hard stuff."
"We've got some Machanlethwed de Maru."
"What the hell's that?"
"It's what you asked for. Really strong cheese. It'll bring you up in a rash just by looking at it. Denser than enriched plutonium, 2 grams can season enough macaroni and cheese for 800 men. The smell alone will corrode iron. A concentration of air of only 17 parts per million will bring on nausea and unconsciousness within 20 seconds. Our chief taster ate a 0.5 ounce by accident and was dead to the world for 6 hours. Open only out of doors, and even then only with a doctor's certificate, and well away from populated areas. It's not really a cheese for eating. It's more for encasing in concrete and dumping in the ocean a long way from civilization."
I looked at Millen, who nodded. There was always someone stupid enough to experiment. After all, no one had ever died from cheese ingestion. Yet. "Let us have 0.5 pound, and we'll see what we can do with it."
"Very well," said Price.
He nodded to a colleague, who opened another suitcase and gingerly took out a sealed lead box. He laid it gently on the table and then took a hurried step backward.
"You won't attempt to open it until we're at least 30 miles away, will you?" Price asked.
"We'll do our best."
"Actually, I'd advise you not to open it at all."
"Thanks for the advice." The trading went on in this manner for another half hour, and with our order book full and the cost totted up, we transported the cheese from their truck to the Acme van, whose springs groaned under the weight.
"What's that?"
I asked, pointing at a wooden crate in the back of their truck. It was securely fixed to the floor with heavy chains.
"That's nothing," Price said quickly, his henchmen moving together to try to block my view.
"Something you're not showing us?"
Price took me by the arm as they slammed the rear doors and threw the latch.
"You've always been a good customer, Miss Next, but we know what you will and won't do, and this cheese is not for you."
"Strong?"
He wouldn't answer me. "It's been nice doing business with you, Miss Next. Same time next month?"
"Yes," I said, slowly, wondering just how strong a cheese has to be before you've got to keep it chained down.
More interestingly, the box was stenciled with the code X14. I handed over the Welsh cash. It was swiftly counted. And before I knew it, Owen Price and his marginally threatening flunkies had revved up the truck and vanished into the night, off to sell cheese to the Stiltonistas in the old town. I always got first dibs. That was probably what the flaming camembert was all about.
"Did you see that cheese chained up in the back?" I asked Millen as we got back into the van.
"No. What cheese?"
"Nothing."
I started the van and we drove out of the industrial estate. This was the point at which the CEA would have pounced if they'd known what was going on, but they didn't. All was quiet in the town, and within a few minutes Millen had dropped me off at home, taking the Acme van himself to start peddling the cheese. I had only just opened the garden gate when I noticed a figure standing in the shadows. I instinctively moved to grab my pistol, before remembering that I didn't carry one in the Outland anymore. I needn't have worried. It was Spike.
"You made me jump."
"Sorry," he replied soberly. "I came to ask you if you wanted any help disposing of the body."
"I'm sorry?"
"The body. The ground can be hard at this time of year."
"Whose body?"
"Felix Eight. You did him in, right?"
"No."
"Then how did he escape?"
"You, me, and Stig have the only keys."
"Wait a moment," I said nervously. "Felix Eight has gone?"
"Completely. Are you sure you didn't kill him?"
"I think I would have remembered."
"Well," said Spike, handing me a spade, "you better give this back to Landon, then."
I must have looked horrified, because he added, "I told him it was to plant some garlic. Listen, you get inside and keep the doors and windows locked. I'll be in my car across the street if you need me."
I went into the house and locked the door securely behind me. Felix Eight was a worry, but not tonight. I had a complimentary block of Llangollen, and nothing was going to come between me and Landon's unbeatable macaroni and cheese.